What's around the bend? That's a saying that is known. Well, what is around the bend? Will the bridge be out? It's a possibility. Or will we come upon a pot of gold? That's a possibility, though rare. One never knows what life will deal you, right? That's the point. But one thing for certain, as long as we live, until we depart, the unexpected turns will not cease. And there's no way to predict what's around the bend. So this is our final sermon where we're looking at Jacob. It's part of what we're focusing on this year, seeing God through ancient people. We're really have spent a lot of time, here we are in June, on the book of Genesis. We're still wrapping up our Genesis study on Sunday mornings. And we've done a lot of sermons out of Genesis, and no apology there, because we haven't really spent a lot of time on Genesis for a few years. And so that's why it was worth that kind of focus. And especially this character that sometimes is lost between Abraham and Joseph. And that's how Jacob, in his life, God turned him into Israel. And we've seen how that he has gone from tricks to trust. He starts off in his earlier phase as being a manipulator and a deceiver, but he learned to trust God, and when he made God his God. And he had returned to the land of Canaan after his sojourn in Haran. When he went there with nothing, he comes back with abundance. He's got this large family, he's got all these possessions, and as we saw last week, he made peace with his brother Esau. A very unusual turn of events. So we would be inclined to think that Jacob has passed all his greatest tests and that smoother waters are before him. Not so fast. It's not before we put faith in God and early in trusting God that we oftentimes have our greatest tests, but it's even after our faith has matured that we have our greatest tests. And so, in a way, Jacob's trials have only begun. How wise we would be to consider his past as we contemplate our future. So this is where our sermon is wrapping up the Jacob chapters in the book of Genesis. And they cover a big chunk of the book of Genesis. And we're going to actually talk about some things we're talking about in the Sunday morning class right now regarding the life of Joseph. But we're going to catch up to the life of Joseph and then pass the life of Joseph all the way to the end of the book of Genesis. So there is this overlap a little bit. But our emphasis is on Jacob. And we see that from chapters 34 to 37, there is just heartache upon heartache. When Jacob returns to the land of Canaan, he settles for a while near a city called Shechem. And there the new round of troubles begin, especially and mostly these troubles involve his children, his grown children. Very often, our most vulnerable area. Sometimes our greatest tests, as great as they are when our children are small, are when they're not small. It starts with the Dinah incident. Dinah was the lone sister we know about among the 12 sons of Jacob, and she is violated by a man who's the son of a ruler of a city. And Jacob's sons, it appears that they are tricking this city and these people because this son of this king wants to marry Dinah now after violating her. He desires her. And so they use deceit to get the whole city, all the men of the city, to be circumcised to join them when there is no inclination that they're going to let them join them and partake of their great flocks and herds that belong to Jacob's family. And it's two sons in particular, it's Simeon and Levi, that after the surgical procedures are taking place and the men are not recovered, they go through the city, and obviously they probably had servants helping them. They plunder the city and they kill all the males. It's a brutal act. One can understand how they're upset about what's happened to their sister, but the solution to it was brutal and bloody. And so Jacob has a response to it in Genesis 34, verse 30. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a prostitute?" It's terrible what happened to Dinah. But the response of these men, it's these brothers, it's passionate to the point of being out of control. And it causes grief for Jacob. And then we have, recorded in fairly short order, three funerals. Chapter 35, verse 8. And Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried under an oak below Bethel. So he called its name Alon Bakuth. Deborah was the nurse of Rebekah, Jacob's mother. When Rebekah was sent for to marry Isaac, she was given as part of the price, the dowry, to go with Rebekah and serve her and serve the family. So Deborah had been serving the family that long. The fact that when Jacob gets back to Canaan, that there is an absence of any reference to Rebekah except for like this, it's clear Rebekah has already passed. He missed that funeral. But here Deborah, who had been a reminder of his mother and an ever-present force within the family, she's gone. And then there is the tragedy of verse 16 beginning. Then they journeyed from Bethel, where they were still some distance from Ephrath. Rachel went into labor, and she had hard labor. And when her labor was at its hardest, the midwife said to her, "Do not fear, for you have another son." As her soul was departing, for she was dying, she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. And Jacob set up a pillar over her tomb. Is the pillar of Rachel's tomb, which is there to this day. Israel journeyed on, pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. It wasn't Leah who died first. Neither Bilhah nor Zilpah, the concubines. It was the beloved wife. It was the younger of the two sisters, Rachel. This was not uncommon in this time for a woman to suffer such a fate while giving birth. Matter of fact, it was not uncommon until about 1900, 1920. It's when it started tilting the other way. She calls him, as she's dying, son of sorrow. Jacob changes his name to Benjamin, which means son of my strength or son of my right hand. It was a courageous act on Jacob's part. We know how much he loved Rachel. We do not have to labor the point that this would have been a deep loss for Jacob. But at this very dark time, he calls this last-born son, son of my strength. He's feeling hurt at the deepest level, but he remained resolute. He wants Benjamin not to be known for sorrow, but for strength. And then it's a very simple thing. Verse 21. Israel journeyed on. Israel journeyed on. He kept having to do that. When he did what he did in Canaan, he had to journey on. When he suffered under Laban's harassment, he had to journey on. when he's called to come back to Canaan and he has to face his brother, he's got to journey on. He's got to face that. And he's going to keep journeying on. You got to keep journeying on. If you're still here, regardless of the deep sorrow, you've got to journey on. Because as we'll see today, there's more life to be lived. And then there's this death. Yeah, he's still around. Chapter 35, verse 27. And Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, or Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had sojourned. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years, and Isaac breathed his last, and he died, and was gathered to his people, old and full of days, and his sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. This would have been hard on Esau, because he had such a special bond to his father, for Isaac to pass. And it must have been hard on Jacob because he had not. Grief is very unique because every relationship is unique. But Isaac was full of days and the sons buried him together. And it's not just death. It's other things going on. If we back up just a little bit in chapter 35, we see this statement in verse 22. While Israel lived in that land, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Israel heard of it. Reuben was the oldest, and thus was in line to be leader of this tribe and have the lion's share of the inheritance. Reuben was the son of Leah. Bilhah was the maidservant of Rachel, who was supplied to Jacob. I know it's so complicated and messed up. But Bilhah had been supplied to Jacob to produce children for Rachel, which she had several. Don't know her age, but given what goes on back in Haran, she's roughly could be the age of Reuben's mother in that neighborhood. So we can start at the most obvious. This could be an act of passion, but it was probably an act also that signified that Reuben saw himself as chief of the family after his father, and this was like a maneuvering on his part to exert that leadership by claiming this concubine. Whew. Later on, when Jacob blesses his sons, he removes Reuben from being the leader of the family. He blesses him, but he does not give him a chief position as a consequence of this trespass stated by Jacob. And that's why in the same breath, when it says this happened and Israel heard of it, can you imagine how that struck him? Another heartache. And then it says, now the sons of Jacob were 12, the first sons of Leah, Reuben, and Simeon, Levi. And here we have this list other places. It's not like we have to have this list. We have this list in a couple of places. But it's at this strategic moment that we're reminded of this complicated family arrangement of a man, two wives, two concubines, and children by all of them, and the complicated dynamics of it all. Because then, once there is some attention given to Esau's descendants, we come to Genesis 37, when the focus begins to shift to Joseph, the firstborn son of Rachel, and the 11th of all the sons of Jacob. And he's the favored one. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings. This is Genesis 37:1. in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably about him. Unfortunately, Jacob had not learned the hard lesson about favoritism among sons. He had experienced that and the complications of that in his own family with Isaac and his brother Esau and his mother Rebekah. But we've made this point recently in, I think, one of the classes. There is strong evidence here when you're running through these texts that this is the son who had been most influenced by Jacob's faith. Jacob develops this deep faith after he goes to Haran. He lives by that faith, even at great sacrifice and suffering on his part. He is an honorable man who is trusting the Lord and being the man that the Lord wants him to be. When it comes to the first 10 of these sons, Reuben and Judah and Simeon and Levi, and then just as a group, the others, what they do together, whoa. These are not the kind of brothers you'd want. These are not the kind of sons you'd want. Joseph, though, has this sterling character from the beginning on. And a character that does not waver because his faith doesn't waver. And so Joseph's faith reflects that of his father's more than the others. And what complicates this further is that, like his father, this boy also was a man of great destinies, noted as a teenager at this point. But his dreams of his family bowing down to him, which he communicates to them over the next several verses, that his family bows down to him. That was just a lot to take. And when you pile these three things up, that he'd given his father a bad report on his brothers, that he had been given this special coat of honor, and that he had dreamed dreams where the family would bow down to him one day, well, the brothers were just simmering with jealousy. And Jacob was troubled by all this, but Jacob, think about it, he knows how within a family God can reverse the birth order and do things differently. He pondered the dreams, we're told in verse 11. And thus began the adventures of Joseph that are not just his own adventures in his own life, though he has his own life, but in the biblical text, they are interwoven with the brothers. Joseph's story is all about him and the brothers. And so the book of Genesis really focuses on Joseph for several chapters and even the rest of the text. And what an incredible story it is, and we're right in the middle of it in our class, and we'll keep working on that, Lord willing, next week. It's a fascinating story, one of the most fascinating set of developments of any character in the Bible. But our attention, our task is Jacob. And as we summarize the remaining chapters of Genesis, where Joseph factors in prominently, we got to keep our sights on Jacob because he's there. He is part of the fabric of the story. Matter of fact, by the time we get to the end of the book, a lot of the attention is back on Jacob. Which means, not taking anything away from the importance and the fascination of the Joseph account, that the underlying story all along had been that of Jacob or Israel. So Joseph goes to visit his brothers who were at a distance away from the father. They were keeping the flocks. And there they see him coming, and there they seize an opportunity. They plan to kill him. They strip him of his garment. They throw him into a pit, but then they had a change of heart. How nice of them not to kill him, but rather to sell him into a caravan of traders going down into Egypt, which meant basically they were flushing him down the drain. They get rid of him. They don't have to have, you know, the guilt of killing him. Although they got plenty of guilt, right? We saw that this morning. And they profit from it financially. It's not the first time we've seen the manipulation and mistreatment of a brother for earthly gain. Jacob did that and he was young, younger. And it's also not the first time we've seen deceit by a son or sons directed at the father. Because how do the account of Joseph that they've gotten rid of? We read in Genesis 37, verse 31. Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood, and they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not." They let Jacob make his own conclusion. The killing of a goat and the using of the brother's garment to deceive their father. That's just like Jacob and Rebekah. Rebekah ordered Jacob to kill two goats, prepare the meat, and then took the skin and put it on his arms to deceive Isaac, his father, into thinking he's Esau, the hairy brother. Goats killed and the animal used to deceive a father. And wow, did this hit Jacob. 37:33 says, and he identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol," that means grave, "to my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Jacob thought that he would end his days mourning for Joseph. He thought he was dead. And he now believed, and he concluded, and he states that he would know grief until he went to his grave. Meanwhile, in Egypt, what's going on with Joseph? Well, a lot of interesting things. Because the way this thing turns out, it's by losing a son, Jacob will find and heal a family. Joseph has a lowly path, the lowest of paths. He's sold into Egypt, which he would have been just human fodder to be ground into that mill of Egyptian agriculture and construction. But he finds a place in Potiphar's house, who's captain of the guard, who has a notable position in the Pharaoh's administration. He's just brought in as a Hebrew servant, but he shines. And as a result, eventually he becomes the chief of the household, the chief servant running the operations of Potiphar's estate. But there his master's wife entices him. He refuses her. She uses his robe to falsely accuse him that he had tried to force himself on her. And Potiphar has him thrown into prison. But even there, the cream rises to the top. He becomes the chief trustee of the prison. But it's in prison, of all places, that he has a fateful encounter with a very critical person. It's Pharaoh's cupbearer. Pharaoh had thrown his cupbearer and baker into prison. They had somehow committed some offense. And Joseph interprets their dreams, which didn't turn out well for the baker. But for the cupbearer, the dream was that he would be restored to service. And sure enough, he was restored to service. However, the cupbearer forgot about Joseph's dream interpretation that predicted that he'd be restored to Pharaoh's service. And as the cupbearer, He would be at Pharaoh's right hand and a most trusted servant. And after 2 years, Pharaoh has dreams. Dreams that just shake him to the core. And it's then the cupbearer remembers Joseph and he tells Pharaoh about this man in prison who interpreted his dreams and they came true. And so, just in lightning speed, Joseph is whisked from prison, dressed up, cleaned up, brought before Pharaoh, where Pharaoh tells him his dreams. Pharaoh leans on Joseph for an understanding here. And Joseph says, God can interpret these dreams. He interprets the dreams about the cattle and the grain. And he tells Pharaoh there's going to be 7 years of great abundance, followed by 7 years of extreme famine. And then he advises the ruler to prepare for the years of famine and appoint a man to administer over the keeping of this food and preparing for the heartaches to come. And Pharaoh picks him. I mean, you talking about an eye for talent. Pharaoh's got it. And he makes Joseph. Lo and behold, in a matter of, it seems like minutes, he goes from prison to the right hand of Pharaoh. They brought a robe out, put a gold chain around his neck, put a signet ring on his finger, and they said, bow the knee. He's second to Pharaoh, Joseph is. Prime minister of Egypt. And then there's the family. Now, after several years, because the prosperity period has passed, and now they're in the famine stage, this whole region is suffering, including the people of Canaan, including the family of Joseph, the family of Jacob. We read in Genesis 42, in verse 1, when Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, why do you look at one another? And he said, behold, I've heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there that we may live and not die. I don't think this is hyperbole. This famine is incredibly severe. And their only hope of having sustenance for their family is to go secure grain in Egypt. This is dripping with God's providence. Because when the sons go down, the 10 brothers go down, they have to go before the governor of the land to negotiate the grain purchase. And it's Joseph. He recognizes them. They don't recognize him. And through a series of events that we're right in the middle of analyzing in our class on Sunday morning, Joseph tests them. It appears that he's quite unsure what to do at times with them. He detains Simeon. He sends the others home with their money. He requests Benjamin to come. And as we get down to the end of chapter 42, when the brothers come back and they tell all this to Jacob and how that Simeon's been held in custody and that there's a request, if they're going to come back again, which they need to do to buy grain, they've got to bring Benjamin with them. That in 42 verse 35, they emptied their sacks. Behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. Joseph is blessing and helping them, but they see it as strange events, the brothers, as some kind of payback that God is doing to them, getting them in trouble. Jacob reads this situation as, whoa, headed in the wrong direction, and it's starting to unravel. His family is. And Jacob's, their father said to them, verse 36, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more and Simeon's no more. And now you would take Benjamin. All this has come against me. Do you see what Jacob is feeling here? And do you also see that he is heavily protective of Benjamin? That now Benjamin, the son left of Rachel's litter, that he is the favored one. You begin to see a different tune sung by the brothers about this favored son. Verse 37, Reuben said to his father, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you. I'll take care of him, says Reuben. Ooh, what's happening to these brothers? Different response than with Joseph, who was the favored son. Well, we see that they suffer on. In chapter 43, verse 1, the famine got even more severe. And Jacob finally agreed to let them go back to Egypt and take Benjamin with them. And we read this starting in verse 11 of chapter 43. Their father Israel said to them, "If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm, a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise. Go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man." That's Joseph, by the way. "And may he send back your brother, other brother, and Benjamin. As for me, if I'm bereaved of my children, I am bereaved." They have no other choice if they're going to survive. That's why Jacob is willing to risk the safety of Benjamin to send him down with the other brothers. Look how much sorrow Jacob is experiencing in this phase of his life. He is so acquainted with sorrow. And he's resolved to it. If I'm bereaved, I'm bereaved. If this is what I have to endure, I have to endure it. He's got to take this risk to get the grain to save the family. So the brothers go back. They return. And Joseph continues to test them. And when he begins to interact with them on the second visit, look what he says when he first interacts with them. He's brought them into his house, by the way. 43 says in verse 27, "And he inquired about their welfare and said, 'Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive?'" You see, Joseph's care about his father. That's where his concern is. And so he throws a feast for them. And then he sends them home with grain, and he has his servants to place this special cup in Benjamin's sack. And then his servants go after them and accuse them of stealing this special cup. And they say, "We've not done that. And if one of us has done it, let him be executed." And lo and behold, they find it in Benjamin's sack. And the brothers just wail and tear their clothing at the prospects that Benjamin's going to be dragged back to Egypt and suffer the consequences of his serious theft. The worst thing that could have happened to them is about to happen, they think. Benjamin is going to not be able to go back to the father. He may even perish. And then the situation comes to a head. In chapter 44, Judah makes a moving speech. We'll study that in the class. Eloquent speech. And he pleads to replace his brother before the governor. Chapter 44. Verse 33. "Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers." You see this? Benjamin's been accused of stealing this cup, which he hadn't of, and so the governor, Joseph, says, "He's got to stay and be my servant. Y'all can all go back." And Judah says, "No. I'll be your servant. I'll take his place. You send him back to his father." Verse 34, "For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father." What a reversal. It's a reversal of events and words because there's been a reversal of their hearts. While before, Judah and his brothers, some had more guilt than others, it appears, but all of them were party to this thing that happened to Joseph. While before, he and his brothers sold the favored son into Egypt as a slave because they despised him. Now Judah is willing to become a slave in Egypt to spare Benjamin and get him back to the father. They've passed the test. They're changed men. Joseph no longer can hold back, and he reveals himself to his brothers. And they're shocked. And note who he's concerned about. Again, we'll say this in detail in the coming classes. But in chapter 45, we read in verse 3, "And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph.'" And the second thing he says is what? "Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. Talk about a shocker, and this is having to sink in on them. Drop down to verse 9. "Hurry up and go to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry.'" He's concerned about Jacob. Verse 11. He says, verse 13 rather, "You must tell my father of all my honor in Egypt and of all that you've seen. Hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him." Another reunion of brothers that at some point you wouldn't have thought would be possible. It's like Jacob and Esau. Now think about this. These brothers to go back to Canaan, they're going to have to take the news that Joseph is alive and that Joseph is the most honored person in this part of the world next to Pharaoh. He's talking about eating crow. But they appear to just swallow it down with no problem. In chapter 45, verse 25, "So they went out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father, Jacob. And they told him, 'Joseph is still alive. He's ruler over all the land of Egypt.' And his heart became numb." This is Jacob. "For he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And Israel said, 'It is enough.'" Okay, you remember when that was said before? That's when Jacob and Esau reconciled. And over the gifts, they said, "Oh, it's enough. I have all that I need." Now Jacob says, "I have all that I need now. Joseph, my son, is still alive, and I will go and see him before I die." And God comes to him. And in chapter 46 in verse 3, he said, "I am the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. And I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes." Jacob thought he'd go down to his grave in sorrow. He thought he'd never see Joseph again. But God tells him, "Go down to Egypt. Go down to your son. And when you die, your son will be with you." So now for the second time, Jacob leaves Canaan. But this time he'll never return alive. And what a reunion we read about in chapter 46, verse 28 starting. "Speaking of Jacob, he had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. Then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck. and wept on his neck a good while. Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I've seen your face and know that you are still alive." The family that had started splintering, losing a son who disappeared, a son being held in Egypt, risking the favored son, the youngest, to go down into Egypt. Who knows if you'd see him again? Now everything's whole. By losing Joseph, he gained this whole family back together. The losing of Joseph, which represented how splintered this family was, now this family has made peace. This was a family before that was characterized by sons eaten up with rivalry, sons who would act passionately out of control, and they would operate by deceit and violence. Now these sons, they have this self-sacrificial love among them for one another. And you see repentance, and you see forgiveness among each other, and you see, underlying all of this, a profound concern for their father. And so Jacob actually, when we get into this last phase of trials, he has a surprising end. Because of the number of tragedies and heartaches and difficulties that had befallen him since he'd come back to Canaan, his heart had been broken time after time. It would appear that Jacob would go to his grave in grief. But he was amazingly surprised by God and God's plan. You see, a journey of faith is filled with trials. Buckle up. But it's also filled with pleasant surprises, gifts along the way. Never be caught off guard by how much pain you may have to suffer because you're a person of faith. But also never underestimate the great peace and joy that God can still salvage from the ash heaps of your life. Psalm 34, verse 19 says, "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all." And in a text that is messianic, pointing to the Christ coming, Jeremiah writes in Jeremiah 31, verse 13, "Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, and the young men and the old together, for I will turn their mourning to joy, will comfort them and make them rejoice rather than sorrow." God has a way after all of our pain to make it all right. Live by faith and prepare yourself for trials, but never give up on His good things because He's got them in abundance. And so the last scenes we have of Israel is that he is in the role of giving blessings. Which takes us in Genesis 47, right to the very place where we started some weeks ago. You're like, weeks ago? I thought it was years ago. Genesis 47 is what we started this series off, reading about the moment that Joseph brought his father in to meet Pharaoh. 47:7, "Then Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, 'How many are the days of the years of your life?' And Jacob said to Pharaoh, 'The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they've not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning.' And Jacob blessed Pharaoh, and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Full circle. This old shepherd, the man who had just been a sojourner all his life, who'd known so many heartaches and troubles, he comes before possibly the most powerful man in the world and blesses him. Because ironically, and as readers of the Holy Scriptures, we understand this, the truth underlying this scene is that because God had turned Jacob into a man of faith, and because God had worked through Jacob to accomplish so many things that were of eternal consequence, it was Israel who was the true royal here. He was infinitely richer and more powerful than Pharaoh. Not because he was mighty in the flesh. He's an old shepherd with a limp. He doesn't have the trappings of a Pharaoh. But he had God. He had the might of the Almighty in his life. And then Jacob keeps blessing. In chapter 47, verse 27, though, he is setting the stage for his death. 47 says in verse 27, then Israel settled in the land of Canaan, in the land of Goshen, and they gained possessions in it. Did you note that? Israel, they. Now you see a switch from the word Israel being used not as a single personal reference to the man Jacob, but now the family. They settled there. They gained possessions in it and were fruitful and multiplied greatly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. And when the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, if now I've found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place. And he answered, I will do as you have said. He said, swear to me. And he swore to him. Then Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed. Some translations say staff. And so now, Jacob performs his last tasks. Joseph is this favored son. And so he calls Joseph to bring his two sons in. And there's an unusual switching of the older and the younger. But I want your attention to go to chapter 48, verse 15. What Jacob says when he blesses the two sons of Joseph and gives them an equal place in the family along with their uncles. Verse 15, and he blessed Joseph, the two sons, and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who's redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys. And in them let my name be carried on, in the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. The next chapter records how that he issued a blessing to all of his other sons. And then we read in chapter 49, and in chapter 49, verse 29, then he commanded them and said to them, I'm to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, which is where Abraham and Sarah, Isaac had been buried, Rebecca and Leah. All this focus on taking his body back to Canaan. What do we make of it? Was it merely the Canaan land on which Jacob was fixed? No doubt the Canaan land was important to them. But the New Testament reveals some things to us that aren't so apparent in the Genesis account. That the patriarchs who were called to walk by faith with God and to believe that one day the land of Canaan would be the land of their descendants, they also knew of another land. The book of Hebrews teaches us in chapter 11, verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. These all died in faith. And having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they are thinking of that land from which they'd gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. The New Testament tells us that Jacob died with his eyes also on that country. And then we're told specifically in this chapter about the people of faith in chapter 11 of Hebrews, verse 21. By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. Jacob wanted his earthly remains to be placed in Canaan, near the remains of his fathers. But what really motivated Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was something far greater than Cain. And as he dies, he's doing two things. May God help me to remember to do this. He is blessing those around him, and he's worshiping God. He exited believing and worshiping and blessing. And so we come to this as the curtain closes. When Jacob finished commanding his sons, he drew up his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. He's gone. Our companion of these many weeks. Our teacher. Our father in the faith. And what did he leave behind? The story for us of a supplanter, a trickster, who relied upon selfish and carnal means in his early years to get what he wanted, who then became, after great struggles with God and men, the man of God, the man of faith, Israel. And though he started off making such a mess of his life because he allowed God to own him and change him, his legacy was redeemed. Will I allow God to grow faith in me? Will I allow God to shape my character? Will I allow God to change my name and change my heart? Will I leave behind a legacy like this? People who I've blessed to carry on now in peace and faith. Blessed be the God of Abraham. Blessed be the God of Isaac. Blessed be the God of Jacob, who became Israel. Blessed be his God, for he's my God, is yours. Brother Hilton's going to lead us in another hymn for one willing to respond in faith to the gospel call of Jesus Christ. If you need to respond, won't you do that as we stand together and sing?